Okay, ladies, we need to start now.
Oh
yes, only now. We need to start Shir 54, and we need to look at the issue of kula. This is very complicated, and quite frankly, we're not going to be able to really do it justice. But just to give you a bit of an inkling into the halachic process and what goes on and where kulas come from, and I also want to show you something on the board which I think is going to be very helpful in understanding the whole process of psak. Next time, as I said, I want to bring an extended piece from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, about how psak of psika work, and that will hopefully be also instructive. But for now, let's look at this. The Mishnah has two Mishnahs in Eduyot. I think we've seen them before. Lama Maskirin Divrei HaYochid Ben HaMerubin says the Mishnah, why are we including? Can you imagine Rabbi Yehuda Anossi writing this or including this? I want to give you some kind of guidance, he says, as to how I'm writing the Mishnah. Why am I including the minority opinions with the majority ones? Or not just him, but before that, why is that the system? Whereas we know that the halacha defaults to the majority. Okay? Where do we know that from? Achri Rabin Lahatri, Pasuk in Mishpatim. She'im Yira Beisdin as Divrei Hayochid, so that if later a Beisdin sees the words of the minority, the Yismach Alav, they will be able to rely on them, they'll be able to use them. She'im Beisdin Yochel Levatl Divrei Beisdin Chaveru, because we know that a later Beisdin are not able to override an earlier Beisdin, Ad She'a Godel Memenu B'Chochma Midyan, until it's on a greater level. Now that's not true of everything, and the Rambam we talked about this at the beginning of the year, the Rambam differentiates between different kinds of halacha in the Sanhedrin. Some it can overrule, some it can't overrule, but the Mishnah is going to be the highest quote-unquote based in that we're going to have. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda Anossi knows that if you want to override the Mishnah, you're not going to be able to, because you can't be bigger than the Mishnah. We've accepted the Mishnah. So only if you include those opinions in the Mishnah, later authorities will be able to say, oh, well look, it is in the Mishnah, I'm not overriding the Mishnah, it's just there as a minority opinion to be relied upon under certain circumstances. So the Mishnah includes minority opinions, says this first source, so that they're there for a rainy day. Now what that rainy day is and how rainy it needs to be, we're going to see soon. However, the very next line of the Mishnah, says number two, Rabbi Yehuda comes along and says, in Cain, if that's the case, Lama Maskirin Divrei HaYochid Bein HaMerubim. Why are you mentioning the words of the Yochid together with the words of the Rabbim? Levatala, for no reason. Now, what's he talking about? We just told you why we were including the words of the Yochid. We're putting them there so that people can rely on them. So what's his problem? What's he asking? So the Rambam, in number 3, explained why is he asking this. Let's go back to number 3 for a second. I'll go back to number 2 to finish off. Says the Rambam, Kfar Kadam Adava B'To'eles and Karas Divrei HaYochid. The Mishnah's already told us why there is a To'eles, why is it useful to have the Divrei HaYochid, Ben Amarobim. And that's so the Beisdin can rely on that Yochid. So now, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda says, in Cain, if that's the case, Ma Tam Maskirin Divrei HaYochid HaDechuyim. Why do we include the words of the Yochid, even if they are, we know that you can't rely on them. Meaning, sometimes we know that you're not allowed to rely on the Shita. For example, let's say Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai were not usually the Rabbim, and their opinion is included, but we know that you can't rely on it. So why would you include those opinions? So, go back to number 2. So Rabbi Yehuda answers, and he says, She'im Yoyma Adam, so if someone later says, Kach Ani Mekubal, this is my Masorah, I want to rely on this opinion. Yomolo, you can say to them, no. Kedivrei ish ploini shamati. You're following the shita of this rabbi, and we know that that's a yochid and rejected. Therefore, minority opinions can cut both ways. They sometimes are there to be relied upon, and they sometimes are there to show this has been thought through, someone else has come up with this before, and it's been rejected, so if you come up with this now, don't think you can do this, because we know you can't do this. This is an idea that's already been rejected. How do you know, as the Poisek, whether the Das Yochid can be relied upon or can't be relied upon? That's going to be the $64,000 question. To a certain degree, that's a part of Masorah. We know as a Masorah which minority opinions do get brought in and which don't get brought in. And it depends on how extreme the need is. We'll see how that works, as to how rejected an opinion is. But we'll get a feel for that as we go through the shir, because this is very contemporary as an issue. And we talked about partnership minyanim a little bit, and the tendency for people to stitch together minority opinions and create something new. You know, if you wanted to go looking through all the minority opinions in every area of halacha, you could put together a Judaism that looked very, very different from the one that we have today. In every area of halacha, you can find minority opinions that will make your hair stand on end. L'kula and l'chumra. But we don't do that. There is a derech, which we go down a psak, and you need senior poskim to do that. Because they know when you're around and when you're in, and I'll give you some examples as we go through. A few things are built into the halachic system. You know them very well. First of all, number four, the idea of lechatchilim b'di'evet. The only reason I brought you this source is to show you it's a Mishnah that includes the concepts of lechatchilim b'di'evet. How do Chazal know that there's such a thing as lechatchilim b'di'evet? By the way, non-Jewish people don't get this. Is it allowed or is it not allowed? Well, lechatchilim, it's not allowed, but b'di'evet, it's fine. But is it allowed or is it not allowed? And this doesn't really exist in law, in English law, to the same degree. As a lawyer, I don't remember a case. You know, they don't say that, like, lechatchila you should drive at 50 miles an hour, but b'di'evet you could drive at 60. Like, I never heard such a thing. Maybe if I thought hard enough, I could come up with something. But it's so fundamental to the Jewish halachic process. Where do they get this from? The different shitas, one of them is ideal and one of them is allowed in a less ideal circumstance. So I don't know the answer to that question, exactly where it comes from. But it's so deeply ingrained and assumed, I suspect it might come from the whole narrative of the Chumash. Meaning the whole Chumash is a lechatchila b'di'evet story. You know, God gives the world a certain mitzvah, and they mess it up. And God says, okay, b'di'evet, now we'll have to go to plan B. And new mitzvahs, and they messed that up. Okay, b'di'evet, now we have to go to plan C. Meaning there's always a lechatchila in the b'di'evet. I don't know what plan we're on now. Plan G, plan H, plan I?
Plan Z.
Plan Z, okay? And you don't stop at Z because, you know, when you're doing numbering, you go to double A and double B and double C and double D, and so you can go on forever. Yeah, Adina, what were you going to say?
In American society, why can't it be like, you're not allowed to kill someone,
but
you have to, like,
if
someone's threatening
you. No, because that's not b'di'evet. It's mutzah lechatchila. Meaning, if someone comes to attack you, then you are allowed under law to kill them. It's not that you're not allowed to kill them, but now you've killed them b'di'evet, it's okay.
Self-defense.
But that's not b'di'evet, that's lechatchila.
Yeah.
Self-defense is...
No, they have it in Florida. And Florida is the stand your ground rule. So someone comes, you think they're going to kill you, so you kill them. Like, clearly you shouldn't have killed them because they were not allegedly coming to kill you. But b'di'evet, because you thought they were coming to kill you, it's okay.
Maybe. Okay, that's pretty close. I'm sure we could think of examples in outside Jewish law, but halacha is very fundamentally based on this. And we'll see when I'm going to draw you something on the board in a minute. You see how lechatchila and b'di'evet are built in. Also, b'di'evet doesn't just mean after the fact. In Aramaic, it means after the fact. Meaning, you know, I want to make a complicated dish with milk and flavors. I go to my rabbi and ask, lechatchila, how should I cook everything? And he tells me, b'di'evet obviously will be, I already messed it all up. I'm coming to you now to ask b'di'evet, having done it, do I have to kasher everything? Can I eat the food, etc.? That's a classic b'di'evet. But there are other b'di'evets. Look at number five. This is a situation of do you need 10 people for Nisuin and Erusin? You probably learned about this if you're doing Evan Ezra. Actually, you can't be doing Evan Ezra because it's at this time, yeah. Right? You could do it last semester. I don't know what you did last semester in there. But he goes back and forth and says, look, you know, lechatchila, you need 10 for the Nisuin, but can you do the Nisuin without? You need 10 for the Sheva Brochas. That's for sure. But maybe you don't need to make the Sheva Brochas. Maybe you can do the Nisuin without all the Sheva Brochas, etc. And at the end, he comes down and says, have a look on the second line. Umihu lechatchila. In the second line, Yesh Yizar Lahada Achasara. You should certainly try and get 10 people for the chuppah. Then Yesh Abasara El B'Toreach Godel. What's Toreach Godel? What's Toreach? Toreach. Tircha. What's Tircha? Bother. A lot of bother. A lot of effort. Okay? If you could only get 10 with a lot of effort, Havik Kediyevet. That's called B'Diyevet. Because Toreach Godel Havik Kediyevet. Very interesting. It's not just the b'di'evet, if I already did it, but b'di'evet could also be, it's extremely difficult for me to do. I can't find 10 Jewish males above the age of bar mitzvah without, you know, running around town and delaying the wedding for another, you know, 5 hours. That could be tzorech gadol. Therefore, that's also counted as a b'di'evet, which is important, because then you can start defaulting to b'di'evet opinions even before you did it, if it's a situation which warrants that. Again, what is Toreach Gadol? That's a good question. For some people, nothing is a Toreach Gadol, because they are prepared to be moser nefesh for mitzvahs for almost anything. For other people, everything is a Toreach Gadol. Just walking from here to there. So, I had a conversation with someone this morning about, like, you know, that we were using Chelik Gimel in the Mishnah Berurah. So one of my sources in Hilchos Shabbos was Chelik Beis. So somebody said to me, like, I didn't bother looking up because it was a Toreach Gadol to go over to this dag and bring Chelik Beis. So I skipped that source. Okay. For them, everything's a Tircha Gedola. But, you know, other people, it's
Can
not.
Can I actually use the phrase Toreach Gadol?
No, I'm using the phrase. No, but they're basically saying, look, you know, I'm sitting down. It's like, I don't think that's halakhically acceptable, by the way, as a Toreach Gadol. But running around town trying to find a minion clearly is. What about Shas Adchak? How do we define that? And you're not going to get totally clear answers here, but just understand the concept. Look at number six. This is about Muksa. Rabbi Yehuda was strict on Muksa. Rabbi Shimon was leading on Muksa. What was Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi? So it says, V'rav k'Rabbi Yehuda Sfirele. What was, not Rabbi Yehuda, sorry. It's Rav. It's the question of Rav, not Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. That's a mistake in the sheet there. What was the position of Rav? V'rav k'Rabbi Yehuda Sfirele. Does Rav hold like Rabbi Yehuda in Muksa? The Haboim in Eder Rav. They asked Rav, Mahu litul to the Shragi the Chanukasa. Okay? Can you carry the Chanukah menorah around, Mekame Chevre, in front of Chevre? Chevre were people who were anti-Semitic and were trying to find who was lighting Chanukah candles, and they would report them to authorities and kill them and pogroms and things, but on Shabbos. So you have a Chanukah light that is lit on Shabbos, and you need to, and it's Muksa. And this, someone tells you, they're coming, move it quick. Are you allowed to pick it up and take it somewhere? Because otherwise somebody might start up with you. So, but Amalu, and he said to them, Shafa Dami, it's Musa. Lenient. It's Musa in Hilchas Muksa. Why? And how can this be? Because doesn't Rav hold like Rabbi Yehuda? Rabbi Yehuda holds, it's not Pikuach Nefesh. Rabbi Yehuda holds strict on Muksa. So why is Rav going leniently? So the Gemara says, Shafat Chak Shani. It's different. It's a Shafat Chak. What does that mean? The Ha'amru Le Rav Kahana V'Rav Ashi Le Rav Hachi Hilcha says, because they asked Rav, is that the halacha? Are we allowed to move things on Shabbos and be lenient to Hilchas Muksa? Do you really hold that? So Amalu said to them, Kedai Hu Reb Shimon Bismoich Alav B'Shasat Chak. Reb Shimon Shita is good enough to rely upon in a Shasat Chak. Meaning, I really pasuk like Rabbi Yehuda, I'm strict in Hilchas Muksa, but in a Shas Adchak, clearly a pogrom is a Shas Adchak, even if it's not Pikuach Nefesh, I'm happy to rely.
You never know if it is going to be Pikuach
Nefesh. Okay, so then you're not relying on a leading opinion, and Lechatchile it's Mutzeh, if it's Pikuach Nefesh, you don't have to die rather than, you know, have Chanukah candles there. Unless I suppose it's a Shmad, maybe, you know, it's the time of Shmad, you have to be prepared to die rather than do anything which is... Shmad is if there's a time of like an institutionalized national anti-Jewish pogrom. So the halacha is you don't have to die rather than break a mitzvah. You know, if someone says to you, eat treif or we'll shoot you, you eat treif. However, b'shas ha-shmad, in a situation where there is a, if you like, a national anti-Jewish, and it would be a chilul Hashem in this situation to eat the treif, because you know they're doing it because they're trying to stop Jews from keeping Judaism. So there may be a requirement even for any mitzvah to die rather than do the Aveira. Not just the big three, but any mitzvah. Look in the Rambam in Hilchas Yisodei HaTorah at the beginning there, where he goes through all the different circumstances in which a person is required to die Kiddush Hashem. There are stories from the Holocaust of big time of the Chachamim who died, who were killed rather than eating a piece of pork. Like, why? You know, it's not one of the big three. Why do you have to die? It says, no, it's a Shas HaShmad. That's a whole different thing. Who is it that you have that whole story? Who was Rabbi Lerner telling me?
The one that stands on a saber.
No, not that one. Yeah, that would be the similar example. Who is it? It's the fellow who runs... That's right, Arachim. The fellow who runs Arachim.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, him. You saw the video where his grandfather died. The hands of the Nazis rather than eat a piece of treif, and he knew that story, so you know the story. Okay, fine. So number seven. Shas Adchak also says the Taz, Shas Adchak k'b'di'evet dami. So not just Toreach Gadol, but even Shas Adchak is k'b'di'evet dami. So it allows you to move into a bunch of other opinions under certain circumstances. Have a look at D and we'll get some understanding of this now. The Rambam says in number 8, the basic position is that in Doraisas we always try to go L'chumra, and only in Darabonans we can go L'kula. But is that a hard and fast rule? Look in number 8. Shnei Chachamim or Shnei Bati Dinim Shenechalku Shaloi Bizman HaSanhedrin. Not in the days of the Sanhedrin. Today, when we have no Sanhedrin. Or Adaloi Hayadava Boru Lehem. Bein Bizman Echad, Bein Bizeh Achazeh, whether they disagreed one after the other or at the same time. Echad Matabe, Echad Matame, Echad Oisef, Echad Matah. Okay, we don't know which word to follow. Im Eincha Yodea Leheichan Hadin Noise. If ultimately, if in doubt, you don't know which way to go, B'shel Torah Halachacha Machmir, B'shel Sofrim Halachacha Meikol. And that is an overriding principle, that in Dinei Drabonon, we are allowed to go more leniently under certain circumstances, but in Doraisa is not. And therefore, one of the things when you're asking a Shaila, one of the things that the Posek is always going to be first focused on is this Shaila a Doraisa or a Drabonon? Because if it's a Doraisa, there's much less room for maneuver, because cases of Sofik or uncertainty will always lean towards a Chumrah Pesach. And that's perfectly reasonable. Therefore, in your own mind, you should know, what is the Raisa and what is the Rabbanon. By the way, I teach Hilchos Shabbos, I try to make sure that people know what is the Raisa and what is the Rabbanon, because you can only ask educated Shailas if you know where you're coming from in that way. So that's the first overriding principle. Even within that, looking at number 9, says the Ramah as follows. The Ramah on Shulchan Aruch says how you pass an halacha. Im hu bahoras isser v'heter, if you're trying to work out an isser and heter, because mominus is a bit different. The Hudava is a Doraisa. If you're dealing with a Doraisa, Yelech Lachumra, just like the Rambam. The Iba Dava Drabonon, Yelech HaMekel. Fine, you've more scope to be Mekel with the Drabonon. By the way, why? Why have you more scope to be Mekel with the Drabonon?
Because a rabbi can tell you, listen to this rabbi, but a rabbi can't tell you, listen to this version of God.
Sort of. Meaning, if there's a Din Doraisa to follow the Drabonons, why are we more Mekel in Drabonons? Yeah. But that's true for Doraisas as well. All Doraisas are understood through the prism of the of rabbis. And therefore, if this rabbi says this Doraisa is the halacha, and then the rabbi says, no, this is okay, you also have to listen to the rabbis. Why is it different? Why is it different? Because in a Din Drabonon, when Chazal created that, we have an expression, Heim Amru Beheim Amru. We'll see it later on. They built into the system of the Rabbanon that if in doubt, you are allowed, we allow you to be lenient. I'll give you an example. The Rambam paskens that there's such a thing as Tum Shabbos. Well, everyone paskens that it's Tum Shabbos. It's a din. The Rambam, Tum Shabbos means that, forget, nothing to do with carrying, but nothing to do with Eruv either. If you go more than a certain distance from your town on Shabbos, you're not allowed to walk anymore. You have to stop. And if you went outside the Tum, on purpose, let's say, you then have only Dalet Amos and you have to stay where you are for the rest of Shabbos. So the Rambam paskens that 12 mil, which is around 7 or 8 miles, is the Doraisa Tchum, and 2,000 Amos, which is around a kilometre, which is, let's say, just a little bit under a mile, no, it's 2,000 Amos is, yes, about a kilometre, is the Drabonon. So in cases of Sothek, about the Drabonon Tchum, we're allowed to be Mekel. Why? Because the Chazal made that in the first place, so they built into that the possibility to be Mekel, because they said, we're bringing in a new stringency, and we're telling you that since it's an extra thing, you don't have to be extra Machmeh. By the way, Tchum Shabbos is very interesting. I think I may have mentioned this before. If you have a town like this, let's say you have a funny shaped town, this is basically how it works. Here's your town. What you do is you take a box, you put it around the town, and you work out you take all the extremities of the town, like this, that are the furthest points, and you take a box like this, okay? That becomes the box that you start from, and then outside this box, 2,000 amos in all directions, that becomes the Tchum Shabbos, and that's as far as you're allowed to walk on Shabbos, okay? And once you reach the end of there, if you go beyond there, then you're stuck for the rest of Shabbos. This obviously could be a very, very big area. If you live in New York, the Tchum Shabbos is almost, it's further than anyone could even walk on Shabbos, probably. But if you're living in a little, bungalow colony or something, and there's just you in a bungalow there, it's not far. You have to know before Shabbos, how far can you go, how far can you not go? And if you walk too far, you're stuck. Yes?
So,
I don't want to get into a Hilchos Shabbos, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so ask me afterwards. But I'm saying that the Tchum is a Rabbanan Tchum, and the wider Doraita Tchum is a different Tchum, therefore one you can be more maker and one can be more lenient. Yeah.
Now,
yeah, it goes as long as there are houses, it continues. Meaning, even if there are neighborhoods which are distinct, as long as the houses are all connected, there are halachas. If you look in the Rambam and Hilchos Shabbos in chapter 27, 28, you'll get it fine. V'davka, so look at the Ramah here on the first line. V'davka im beis acholkim heim shavim. But that's only if they're both on the same level. What if there's a great rabbi versus a small rabbi? Aval ein somchen al divrei hakotan neged divrei hagadol. But he says, you can't rely on a lesser opinion over a greater opinion. God will be men of a chachma or minion. What's chachma and minion? What's chachma?
Knowledge.
So what's minion? So what does that mean, number? Number of what? Followers. Meaning minion means, how accepted is this rabbi's opinion, this rabbi himself, in the Jewish process of Pesach? You can't follow a lower level, a smaller person in chachma or following. Afilu b'shasat chak. Relying on a small person is not an easy thing. Unless there's also Hefsed Merubah, which is another factor which we'll talk about in a minute. Meaning, it's not so straightforward to follow somebody. You have to know who you're following. I mean, if I say to you that, you know, this opinion is according to this rabbi, but this opinion is according to this rabbi, who said you can rely on the lesser known rabbi? What happened? Oh, not again. Did I just do this again? This is the second shirt that I've done this to. Okay, fine. My wife's going to kill me. Never mind. It doesn't matter now, does it? I'll have to remember not to put this pen in this pocket anymore. Okay, fine. Doesn't matter. They don't come out anyway. Fine. So you have to know who your people are. And it's not so straightforward. If you have a Masorah, if you have a personal Rav, by the way, we didn't talk about this in the sheet, but if you have a Rav that you follow and it's your Rav, okay, your Rav takes priority over pretty much everything else, if that really is your Rav. But if you're shopping around and speaking to different people, shopping around is probably not the right answer. But if you're, look, there's an opinion that says X, you have to say, well, who is that? Is that someone that one can rely on? What is Hefsed Merubah? So there's a whole discussion here. Number 10, the Pesachei Tshuva says, some people say it's a sixth. You know, if there's a sixth loss extra, so he says, well, that can't be, because it means that if, like, a sixth of a dollar is a few cents, but a sixth of $1 million is a massive amount of money. Are you telling me that if it's $1 million versus, you know, $1,050,000, that's less than a sixth, but it's still a massive amount of money? A sixth of the original. Let's say as follows. Let's say I paskin the lechatchila, but the psak lechatchila will cost you a sixth more than the psak with the evet. You're going to lose out a sixth more. Okay? Let me give you an example. Let's say we paskin that your sukkah is not kosher. You need to do... is only b'dievet kosher. You really need to do other things to it to make it better. But that's going to cost you spend $1,000 on your sukkah. It's going to cost you another $1,000 to make it a lechatchila. Okay? That's a Hefsed Merubah. Is that how do we gauge that? So if you're a multi-billionaire, that $1,000 is obviously irrelevant. If you're a poor guy, then the $1,000 is a fortune. So at the end of the day, the Pesachei Tshuva and Rav Moshe in number 10 and 11, they say that the Hefsed Merubah has to be according to the person. You cannot give an absolute figure. You can't say it's a sixth. Because a sixth could be a massive amount of money, it could be a tiny amount of money, it depends on who you are, it depends on the person, etc. And at the end of the day, Hefsed Merubah is a relevant factor. Some people have Hefsed Merubah, like a poor student who has no money, a load of loans, Hefsed Merubah could be quite a small amount of money. Because they don't have much money. The Shach asked in number 12, and it's the same answer we gave before, how can you be lenient in a Hefsed Merubah? What gives you the right, just because you're going to lose money, to be lenient? And by the way, don't get me wrong. There is no overriding principle that if you're going to lose money, you can break the Rabbanon. Some people seem to feel this. Really, Rabbi? You know, surely if I'm going to lose money, I don't have to keep... No! There has to be an opinion on whom to rely. Meaning, the Rabbi can't have Rachmanis on you and say, oh, you know something, you're going to lose money? Don't worry about this halacha. Chas v'chalila. But if there is a shita out there, and I'm going to draw something on the board in a minute, if there's a shita out there on which you can rely, Hefsed Merubah may allow you to bring that shita in. Why? Why is loss of money, why does that allow you, says the Shach, to rely on a lenient opinion? What did he say? Do you remember? Look what he says here. Look at number 12. Hech evshel akot va'torah be'hefsed merubah. How can you just change the Torah because of money? Isn't that what God said to do? God said to do this. He didn't say to do this if you can afford it. He said to do it. Okay, to go after the majority, not after minority opinions. Who cares if it's going to cost you money? If you have to follow that law, you have to follow the law. He gives an interesting example. We kill people in basin. We put people in cherem. We make things hefker. Abdin beyad al pri. Let me ask you a question. A guy comes up in front of basin, and is he guilty? Is he a murderer? Isn't he a murderer? So there are 71 rabbis on the Sanhedrin. 60 say he's a murderer. Okay, 11 say he's not a murderer. Does he get executed? Yeah. So he could turn around and say, excuse me, you know, I want to rely on the minority. Have some marubah. Like, my life is, I have some marubah. Why can't I be sonich on the minority shita? And the answer is, because that's not how it works, okay? God says follow the majority, follow the majority. And the biggest has marubah there is. Because you can't have a hefsa marubah bigger than a person losing their life, and they still can't follow the minority. So what does he say? Mira, third line, halacha psukahi she'ein sonchen alakot negid agadol, v'loi b'yachid negid arabin. You can only rely on a minority or smaller opinions. Ela im ken she'yesh hefsa marubah, that's only if, hainu, it's a drabonon. Only in Issa Drabonon. And this is another reason why, if you end up going to a rabbi and saying to him, I have a big problem, I need to rely on a minority opinion. If it's an Issa Doraisa, says the Shach, we're not going to be able to rely on that. But Tama Dehema Omru Behema Omru. Because at the end of the day, in the Issa Drabonon, the rabbis made the Issa, the rabbis can say when you can waive the Issa. So the Shach's position is that a Hefsa Marubah only works with a Din Drabonon, not a Din Doraisa. However, go over the page, others disagree. And there's a major machlokas about this himself. The Orach HaShulchan says, a subtle but important difference, number 13. Have a look here. Klal Gol Tarek Ledas. B'chol Mokim Shirabos Seinu Bali HaShulchan Orach Matirin. Whenever the Shulchan Orach allows something, B'shat Adchak, in an emergency situation, or the Hefsa Merubah, why is that? Zewmit Neshe Ika Ledina Nira Lahem Lahatir. Because the Ika Hadin is to allow it. Meaning, mi'ikah hadin, it's mutter, but they prefer you to be machmir. And if nei shehar b'poiski machmirim, but because many poiskim are machmir, l'kach b'shatat chag b'hevza merubah, mo'ikminim al'ikah hadin. Listen, this is very important. If mi'ikah hadin, you know what I mean by mi'ikah hadin? Like, the bottom line, basic halacha, is that it's actually mutter, but l'chadchila you should be machmir, so why are you allowed to rely on the minority opinion b'di'evet? Because that's the ikah hadin. Yeah? And it, at the end of the day, that is the basic halacha. So would that apply to a Darabonon only or also to a Doraisa? Yeah. Also to a Doraisa. Meaning it's not because in a Rabonon it's built in that they allowed you to rely on a minority opinion. It's that this is the basic Ikah Hadin, and therefore we can rely on that when push comes to shove. And Rav Lichtenstein says this. Look at number 14. Someone read number 14 in English. Yes, Joy.
Okay. It is this concept which undergirds legitimacy of recourse to minority opinions, the Shad Hadchak. Inasmuch as these opinions are not simply dismissed as erroneous, but procedurally rejected, they are very much alive, held in reserve, where they can be called from the shelf in a crisis.
In other words, it's important that minority opinions are not erroneous. They're procedurally rejected. Meaning in the halakhic process, they just don't make the majority. But they're there for a crisis. Carry on.
In effect, the principle of Rabbi so-and-so is worthy of being relied on in extension circumstances.
We saw that before. Kedai Rabbi Shin Lismoich Alav Vashat Adchak.
States that well, even if he was been
accepted
in a halakha, in an emergency,
we
envision ourselves back, sans decisive resolution,
and hence,
as authorized, concede another view.
What does sans mean?
Without.
Without, meaning it's used as a kind of English word as well, that we imagine ourselves back before the majority, and we go back to this minority, and we can hold that. Okay, carry on.
Moreover, and this is no less remarkable, under the pressure of circumstance, we are not bound to the general directive of
Oh, which is very interesting. That in certain areas, even in Doraisas, according to some poskim, there is the ability to run a Shasat Chak. Now, you see built in here, already a machlokas, the Shach says the Shasat Chak and Hefsa Merubah only apply in Rabbonos. And others say they apply in Doraisas. That's going to be one reason why some rabbis come out more machmeh than others. Not the only reason. Because if, as a matter of course, you don't feel that there's any leniency in a Doraisa, even the Shasat Chak or Hefsa Merubah, then what am I going to see? You're going to get an answer that's going to be no. If, on the other hand, you understand no, even Doraisas, under certain circumstances, because the Ikah HaDin goes that way, we're going to allow you to be lenient, then that's going to allow you to, if you like, get a slightly different answer than you would have done from the first rabbi I mentioned. Yes?
How can any rabbi say that a shat that's chak wouldn't overrule a zoraisa?
Would or would not?
Would not.
Because you have, like the shat says,
scenario, you have a scenario like Eliyahu Cohen, not Eliyahu, Eliyahu.
Yes.
With the Obama.
No, but that's a harash shah. It's completely different. It's not shah tzadchak. It's a harash shah. And nobody has the right to overrule a daraisa. That's a completely separate thing. We don't pass in a harash shah on the basis of a normal shayla. Yeah, no, we don't have an Nevi'im. We don't have a Sanhedrin. We don't do harash shah anymore, really, in that way. Some people might call something a harash shah, but what they're really saying is they're relying on the minority opinion, which brings me to this point. Let's get rid of this tum, Shabbos. Where's the doodah? Here we are. And let's do the following. Okay? I want to write something on the board that on the surface is going to look very strange. Okay? Oh, now I've got lines everywhere. Here, Talmud. Sorry about squeaking. Yeah, let's go. Okay. Now, as you can see, I know my alphabet, at least up to the letter I. Let's imagine that, I didn't do this with you before.
No.
Let's imagine that what we've got here is a Talmudic sugya. Across the whole Talmud you learn the sugya. And you look in the Rishonim, and there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 different opinions. That's unusual. Often there's just one opinion, everyone agrees. Sometimes 2, 3. But 9 opinions would be pretty unusual. But let's imagine there are 9 opinions. Let's pick 9 random Rishonim names and put them on these opinions. Rashi.
Tosfos.
Ramban. What second is next? Red.
Rosh.
Tor.
Taz.
Too late.
Three.
Too late. And the Shulchan
Aruch.
What's Hadeshin? Very, very sort of machloek is either Rishon or Achra. Rashbam's good. Who's the last one we have? All right, then, Rashba. I mean, you pretty much put Rash anyone, and you'll get Rizva. Oh, now you can think of them. Oh, Rizva. Okay, here we are.
Now,
the Radak is not tend to be doesn't tend to be a halachic sort. That's more proportional. And now let's imagine that there's a continuum here from strict to lenient. Now, of course, this is not to say that the rabbis you chose randomly will be more likely to be strict or lenient. In fact, in the Rishonim, you don't tend to find certain people who are more often strict and more often lenient. It depends on how they learn the sugya. In other words, we learn halacha through the prism of the Rishonim. That's how we learn halacha. Okay? We don't tend to go back into the sugyas and start from scratch. Occasionally we do, we'll see that in a minute. But we tend to go through the Rishonim. Let's say we turn around and say, how did people paskin in the Middle Ages, in the year 1200? How did people paskin in the sugya? Well, it's very simple. In the town of Rashi, you pass it like A. In the town of the in the town of the Torah, or in the town of the Rashba, you pass it like the Rav of the town. And therefore, people would do whatever they did. Comes along the Shulchan Aruch in the 1500s and says, this won't work anymore for reasons that we've discussed. We need to make up sack. Okay? Now, let's weight the dice a little bit. Okay? Let's weight the dice a little bit. Let's take out the Riv. Let's change him.
No.
And let's put him over here. Actually, no, let's do it the other way around. Let's do this. Who's this, the Ramban?
Yeah.
Oh, we haven't put the Ramban?
No, we didn't.
Yeah. Where's the Ramban? Did I just run the map?
No, this is the Ramban that you're touching. Next to him. See is the Ramban.
Ramban?
No, she Ramban. Is the Ramban.
Oh, the Ramban?
She is Nachmanides. C is my
money. Okay,
Ramban.
Okay, good.
Good.
It doesn't, guys, it really doesn't
never
matter.
Mind.
It does. It really doesn't matter in the slightest. Okay. Yeah, this was a rash bar. Anyway, fine. what we're gonna do is like this. We're gonna have him as a Ramban. We're gonna have him as a Ramban. Okay, the Ramban, and we're gonna have him as a Rosh. Okay, and we're gonna have him as the Rim. Fine. Good. Now, let's imagine the Shulchan Aruch comes along to this scenario and says, how am I going to paskin? So you know how he's going to paskin. How's he going to paskin?
Rambam Rosh.
So he has a majority of the Rambam Rosh over the Rif. So he's going to turn around and say, this is the Psak L'Chatchila. Okay? L'Chatchila. And maybe he'll say that the Riff is b'di'evet. He's a bit more lenient, and you can round up b'di'evet. So the Shulchan Aruch, he won't always say it that way, but let's say that's not inconceivable he might say that. So the Shulchan Aruch will now say, the halacha is like D. I come to my rabbi and ask, what should I do? The halacha is D, because we've now passed in like that position, the Shulchan Aruch. B'di'evet, let's say the Shulchan Aruch might include another opinion, which is E, and I certainly can rely on my b'di'evet. Very nice. So what's A, B, C, and what's F, G, and H, and I? Okay, what are they? So, simply put, A, B, and C are chumras. C is a bit more machmir, B is a lot more machmir, and A is off-scale, unbelievably machmir. Can I rely on these? Can I follow these opinions? Not rely on them. Can I follow these opinions? Am I allowed to?
Yes.
What did we say last time?
You need to be sincere.
I need to then weigh it up. I need to ask on the Mishkal HaChassidus, is it Kedai for me to follow C? Is there a good reason for Tzuvah Leikos? Is Yerushalayim or Tam or Nero or all these things? Is it going to cause problems? Is it going to cause long-term, you know, issues? Is my family with me and all that? And the more Machmir I want to be, the more I have to be really sure that it could be that A is off the charts. And any rabbi will tell me, you know, nobody does this anymore. Just forget about it. You know, it's just not accepted anymore, even as a chumrah. Could be. You know, I'm sure if you wake up to most rabbis and say, should I shave off my hair when I get married, okay, and be totally bald, most rabbis would probably say to you, that is not even, you can't even consider that as an acceptable option because of, you know, a million different reasons. Unless maybe you get married to someone and join that community, whatever, that's a different thing. What about F, G, and H? What are they? Coolers. Ah, so when can you rely on them? So here's how it works. F is a little bit more makel than the b'di'evet p'sak. F is the kind of thing that it says in your Art Scroll English Halacha Sefer, the Halacha is like D, but the B'di'evet is like E, and if you did F, then you ask a rabbi. You ever seen that written in books? If it says in a book, if you did ask a rabbi, it means that there are certain circumstances which we're not prepared to write in the book, because we don't want people who read English Halacha books to know about them, okay, because they will abuse them, because on the whole, people who only read Halacha in English, on the whole, are less knowledgeable, which I think is a fair statement, the people who read Halacha in the more original Svarim. Therefore, we're prepared to tell you that there is a potential heter, but we're not going to tell you where and when, because you have to go to a posuk to ask them. Sometimes in the footnotes, by the way, in the Hebrew footnotes, you end up with more heterim. Because if you're good enough to read the footnotes, then we can trust you with one stage further on the, you know, on the spectrum. Which, okay, makes a lot of sense. What's G? G could be like a really big, like, I mean, F might be okay, like a Bashat Adchak, Hefsim Arubah, maybe, right, on a Baman. But G, I don't know, G might be like, for example, if I have a Shiloh about dropping milk into my chicken soup, and I go to the Rav, and it's like, you know, I'm going to lose out to make new Shabbos food, okay, that's one thing. But let's say it's at a wedding. I'm making a wedding for my son, and I just found out that in the kitchen they just poured milk into the chicken soup, and there are 600 people waiting to be served the first course, second course, and everyone's kind of looking at their watches saying, what's going on? That's a very big hesed merubah that's going on here. Well, maybe we could just stand up and announce the soup's off, no pun intended, if it's chicken soup. Or if, you know, but that's like a big shy. What about an H? An H might be a question, and I've had this with Shiloh sometimes, where you go to a rabbi and he says to you, I'm going to give you a heter, but you're not to tell anybody else that I said it. And if you tell anybody else that I said this, I'll deny it. Because it's a heter which is not reliable. He might have a masorah that you can rely on this particular heter, but he doesn't want it getting out there because people will not understand it, and people will apply it wrongly, and people will scream and put him in cherem because they don't understand why he did it and how he did it. For example, let's imagine you have a shaila about a husband and wife going to the mikvah. So they come to the rav and they ask a shaila and they say, look, you know, I was going to go to the mikvah on Monday, but now I have to go on Tuesday. So we don't like to delay the mikvah. It's important, shalom bayis. It's a key issue. But at the end of the day, look, okay, so next month you'll get it right, and really, l'chatchili, you should have done this, and maybe even b'di'evet, you can't rely on it, you have to wait till tomorrow. Okay, sometimes that's upset. Let's say they come along and say, yeah, but tomorrow morning we're going on holiday, we're going on vacation, and the nearest mikvah is going to be 300 miles away. Okay, so maybe, or maybe not, that will be grounds to rely on a more lenient opinion, which under normal circumstances you might not have been able to rely on. Again, maybe it's not. Depends on what the shaila is. Every shaila is different. But let's say they go, and this happens, they go to the rabbi and say, look, rabbi, you know, we've been married for 15 years, and, you know, we're now in our late 30s, early 40s, and we've been having fertility treatment, and there's only so many rounds of this treatment that they can do, and there are many treatments like this. They can do it 3 or 4 times, but after that they say it's dangerous, we won't do it again. And my wife is ovulating, or I'm ovulating tomorrow morning. They told me that this is, maybe this could be my last chance in life to ever have a child. Now, that's quite a serious shaila, okay? And it could well be that a posik who has a masorah that you can rely on, one of these way-out opinions, even if it appears in no books, that may be something which is legitimate as a very extreme kula, even though they may say to you, then I'll deny it if you ever say that I said this, okay? Because other people won't understand how that works. But it's not that the kula is the rabbi feels sorry for you, gives you a dispensation. You know, when I used to work as a lawyer, people used to ask me all sorts of very understandable but very non-Jewish questions. Like when I said to them, I need to leave early on Friday, they'd say, well, can you get a dispensation? It's a very important deal. And the answer is, well, no, it's not how it works. You can't go to the priest and ask them to let you off just this once. There's no heterim if it's against the halacha. It's awesome. If there's a shita, then there's a discussion as to when you can bring it and when you can't bring it. That's an important thing. So it's not just the rabbi feels sorry for you.
What's I then?
Oh, I may be off the scale. I may be that, like, there is this shita out there which is rejected in halacha. There are das yachas that are rejected in halacha. There's nothing you can't rely on this. You'll find it there. I'll give you an example. I've seen this in the women's minion question. The Maram of Rottenberg has a shita which is quoted, which is, if there's a shul full of Kohanim, only Kohanim in the shul, okay? You have 15 guys, all Kohanim. So, who do you call up first for the laning? Well, that's not half. Who do you normally call first? A Kohen. Do you have one? You have 15. So, you call up a Kohen. So, when you call up a Kohen, who do you call up second? A lady. Do you have a lady?
No.
So, what's the halacha? If you don't have a lady, who do you call up second? Which one?
The first one.
The first one. You can't call up another Kohen, because calling up a second Kohen after another Kohen is casting aspersions on the yichus of the first Kohen. It's ke'ilu you're saying you're not a real Kohen, we have to call up another Kohen. And we really don't want that to happen. We really, really don't like that. So you call up the second guy again, you give him the second aliyah. Good. So you have 15 Kohenim, you call up the first guy for the first aliyah, and the same guy for the second aliyah. So who gets called up third? Well, you're stuck, because there's no Yisrael. You can't call up another Kohen. You can't give the same guy 3 aliyahs.
Woman.
So you call up a woman from the Eretz Yisrael, you call up, give her aliyah. And the Maharam Rothenberg quotes this as like a poshet, you know. Women, according to the Ikkar HaDin originally of the Gemara, count towards the Aliyot on Shabbat. You can call them up. But the Gemara Paskin, but we don't call up women because of Kovet HaTzibur or whatever it is. We're not getting into the whole sugi now. But in these circumstances, you can, because Kovet HaBrias for the Kohen overrides Kovet HaTzibur not to call up the woman. But now, is that the halacha? I don't know. Good shaila, in the shul where they were all Kohenim, is that what they do? I doubt it, actually. But that, I don't know. But can you use that as a das yochid to try and influence? They bring that and they say, oh, look, you see, women can be called up. It's nothing like that simple. Can you use that Maram of Rottenberg, even in that shaila? Can you extrapolate it to other shailas? To stitch together an argument made on lots of deot yachid is a non-halachic thing to do. And what we're trying to understand here is under what circumstances yes, what circumstances less. Let's look at the last thing here, which is Itmeh Hilchester. Itmeh Hilchester will explain a lot of other things as well as to why some posting seem to be stricter and some less. There's a big shaila. At what point do you draw a line and say, beyond that line, behind that line, we cannot go? So the position of the Ramah, in number 18, we've seen this before, is that line is the Gemara. Meaning, after the Gemara, at the end of the day, it is possible to argue with people that came after the Gemara. Maybe, you know, rule against them if you have the ability to prove it. But beyond the Gemara, we can't. No, look at number 18. If it seems to a Dayan or the people in his generation, they have good proofs. She'ein adin kamoshe huskim b'poskim, that the din is not like the previous poskim I've mentioned. You can disagree. Anyone can disagree with anybody. As long as it's not something that's mentioned in the Gemara, meaning there are these lines, the membrane, and there are some of them that are more permeable than others. Okay, Talmud Ga'onim, Rishonim. Okay,
Acharonim. Okay? Who can disagree with whom? So says the Ramah, at the end of the day, the only truly impermeable membrane is this one. Anyone else through this period here can disagree with anybody else. Now they don't tend to. People only tend to disagree within their own area. Rishonim disagree with Rishonim, and Acharonim with Acharonim. But says the Ramah, actually, you can cut through this and relearn the sugyas and go to the back of the town. But we find certain, especially Ashkenazi poskim, that have more tendency to do this. The Vilna-Gaon certainly did this. However, others say, no, actually, once you draw these lines are now uncrossable. And the Gemara is now not the line, actually, maybe other people. Have a look at the Chazon Ish number 19. Seif Vahara. Hamakubelis mipi rabbi saying that the bottom line of Psak, which is accepted by our rabbis, as a mipi emanuchan, whose words we live on, Maran Bet Yosef, like the Bet Yosef, Magin Avraham, who's the later line, even the Mishnah Brura, he horam kuyemes, this stands as Psak, kamoi mipi Sanhedrin Melishka Zagos. Just as if it had come out of Sanhedrin in the temple. That's a strong statement. As if to say, now, the Mishnah Brura is accepted Psak, you can't go behind that. You can't reopen that. He's Paskin, he is Itzma Hilcha, so the Hilcha has been stated that you cannot go beyond that. That's the Gemara I kind of skipped over, number 16, where it says that according to the Tanna that was dealing with that, he said, Itzma Hilcha, that's it, we can't go beyond. So, one of the reasons that you sometimes find that some rabbis come up with more, what's the word? Innovative psak are prepared to answer differently, and other rabbis seem to be much more conservative with a little c in the way that they understand the scope of psak, is because different people draw itma hilchasa in different ways. Someone like Rav Moshe Feinstein, I brought you the quote in number 20 there, Rav Moshe Feinstein clearly says that as far as I'm concerned, it's the Gemara. I can disagree with anyone. Look at a couple of things he says. Look at the third line where I've underlined. The Ein Loimer, he says, we don't say that Hapsak Shea Poiskim, Sheba Poiskim, who is Sik Bepeirush. We don't say that that is the, it's called the final bottom line Psak. Okay? On the contrary, the Veloi Damila Nifsik Begemorah Bepeirush. It's not the same as something is actually in the Gemara Bepeirush. Anything after that is Loi Itma Hilchasa, which is why Rav Moshe Feinstein was able to come out with Psakim that were very Mechudash. He would go back to the sources, he would go back to the Gemara, he would learn out the sugis, and he would say, look, I learned the sugis, this is mutter. Ah, but everybody else says it's wrong. There was a famous psak that he gave on artificial insemination by donor. Is a woman allowed to have a baby through an insemination through a donor from a bank, from a sperm bank? And Rav Moshe learned through the shayas and says, look, if it's through the poskim, that if it's a couple and they're they want to have children and they're married and this is the only way they can have children, meikadin. He says, I hold his mutter. And he gave him a heter. Everybody screamed and shouted, and then people saying this is disgusting and it's outrageous and so I'm not allowed. He goes against it. He says, look, I've learned the sugyas. At the end of the day, if it's mutter, it's mutter. I'm not suggesting this is a lachatchila, but we're not in a lachatchila situation. This couple is the only way they can have a family. And he was prepared to say things that other people, perhaps, were less willing to say. But you can't go beyond the Talmud, that's for sure. You can't go beyond the Talmud. One of the big things that the conservative movement did in order to halachically make it different from the Orthodox movement is they consider this to be an open sugya. Now, they'll turn around and they'll say, look, the Talmud clearly rules like Rabbi Akiva, that this is Osa, but we think that today things should be different, so we've had a vote, and out of the 15 rabbis on the committee, 12 said yes, 3 said no, and therefore we overrule Rabbi Akiva. They'll do that, because they say we're not bound by the Gemara. That's something that's never been in the halakhic system ever. Everybody understands that there's a Kabbalah, that the Gemara is impervious in this way. The last thing I just want to say, and you've seen this before, but I'll mention it again, one of the things that you can't do to kulis is abuse them. If you're shopping for heterim in order to get out of responsibilities, then that's called rishus. That's called being wicked. Look at number 21. No, this was before it was Paschim that you couldn't follow Beis Shammai. So those who follow Beis Hillel, follow Beis Hillel. Those who follow Beis Shammai, follow Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel, if you're looking for colours from this side, or Mikule Beis Hillel, Rosha. Why the Rosha?
to Russia, because at the end of the day you're trying to fit the halachic system to your desired lifestyle rather than the other way around. And that is not an honest system. This is what we usually call shopping around for psak. That doesn't mean you can't ask a second child, we talked about this. If you're really not just doing it to try and get out of something, but you feel for whatever reason the first rabbi didn't understand, he made a mistake, the circumstances have changed, it's now a new situation, you're certainly allowed to ask a second shayla to a second rabbi, as long as you tell them, I already asked this shayla to Rabbi X and he said Y, etc., etc. That's fine, that's not called rishus, that's perfectly reasonable. But what you can't do is you can't go, you know, you find out who says what, and then you go and ask them. Sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes it's difficult. Because I know certain rabbis are likely to come out with certain answers, and if I ask them that question, then that's what they're likely to say. You know, often the rabbonim that I take questions to, I actually can't predict what they're going to say. Sometimes students bring me questions and they say, and I take them to certain people, and it's usually to people that I say to the student, look, I really don't know what they're going to say. Could be yes, it could be no. I have actually a story about this, but that's not for now. I've sat in with students in coffee bars in New York, emailing rabbis in Israel saying, do you want a psak? I don't know what he's going to say, yes or no. And he comes back, you know, yes or no. But there's nothing wrong with that if you're not trying to do it in order just to get out of the responsibility. Okay, fine. Let's leave it there. Next time, as I said, there's going to be a lot of...